Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Everybody, my name's Sue Supriano, and I'm happy to be able to speak today with Maud Barlow. Maud Barlow is the chairperson of the National Council of Canadians, which is Canada's largest advocacy organization. It has 100,000 members, which is great. So welcome, Maud. And you're also on the board of directors of the International Forum of Globalization. So that's what we're going to be talking about. So what does the National Council of Canadians advocate for?
Okay,
first off,
it's just the Council of Canadians, just a technical. That's okay. We're a nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that came together to fight the first free trade agreement in the world, which was the Canada-U.S. Free Trade Agreement. We came together in 1985, but the agreement was signed on January 1st, 1989. And we've just continued to fight unregulated, market-based free trade, economic globalization, privatization, deregulation, and the fallout on the environment, health and safety legislation, social programs, and so on. For us in Canada, that free trade agreement, the then NAFTA, were the most important tools to really force Canada to start abandoning its universal social programs. So it was a very, I personally came out of the women's movement and got involved in this because it was my firm belief that these trade agreements were going to eventually force Canada to abandon universal health care, family allowance, pensions, and so on, all the kind of issues, all the kind of programs that we had set up that we felt made us a little bit different from our American neighbors. And that is that we believe that basically so that we could maintain our sovereignty, our national sovereignty, we wanted to have we had these national social programs, which I call ribbons of interdependence, which meant that we built east-west and north links so that Canada wouldn't be totally taken over by American culture and by American private enterprise and so on. But the free trade agreement has made it so that that's pretty hard now to stop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my impression is that these supposedly free trade agreements are making things go from bad to worse all over the world in many ways. Would you talk some more about what's happening in Canada along those lines? And I'm also interested in the fact that you came out of the women's movement.
Yeah. Well, very much I think people know what free trade or structural adjustment has done to southern countries, and they know how governments have been forced to cut back on social programs and education and health and let big corporations come in and take over domestic industry and restructure agriculture and corporatize food production and so on. But I think a lot of people don't know that that also has happened to some first world countries through free trade. It was structural adjustment imposed by the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund in the south. But in many northern countries, that same thing is happening through free trade.
I just want to say I don't think that most people probably do understand. I mean, I talk constantly in my interviews about structural adjustment, but I don't think the average person has the foggiest idea what it is. And the way that things get presented in the media, if they're there at all or if people read them, I think most people don't have really know what's going on. So that's why we keep doing this, keep putting it out.
Well, structural adjustment, as you know, were the imposed restrictions placed on countries once the International Monetary Fund had loaned them debts that third world countries couldn't pay back, and that was usually because the interest rates had jacked up so high. So they imposed a system friendly to American corporations, basically. This is imposed by the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank upon these countries. But what this has been very much the situation in some northern countries, only using free trade. So we've seen, for instance, our unemployment insurance decline dramatically. We've seen we saw the end of family allowance programs, a great decline in our pensions, great decline in our social assistance programs, huge incursions into privatization in our health care, which was still, to an extent, publicly controlled. A lot of talk now about privatization of post-secondary institutions, universities, so on. And then a real assault on our environmental and health laws through this thing called Chapter 11 of NAFTA. Because under NAFTA, for the first time in any trade agreement, corporations were given the right to bypass their own governments and sue the governments of other countries if those countries brought in any laws, regulations, or even enforced regulations that they currently had in a way those countries could show had cost them lost future profit. And so Canada, and now actually there are going to be some challenges. One, there was one in Mexico recently, and there may be some in the U.S., that are forcing governments to cut back on their own health and safety and environmental legislation or pay penalties to foreign corporations.
I want to kind of underline this because you're moving along kind of quick, and I understand, I know about it, but I'm not sure that all the listeners will know what we're talking about. So basically, what it is that there are these big organizations, these initials, NAFTA, North American Free Trade Association, FTAA, which most recently met in Quebec, these big institutions, the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, these big institutions that meet usually in secret, or at least they don't make it real public, and make decisions which are often presented as being wonderful for people. But in fact, the opposite is the case. And that's where, like, free trade, that doesn't sound like such a terrible thing.
Yeah, the most important thing about these trade agreements, and of course there are a number of them now under the World Trade Organization, and then there's the regional ones like NAFTA and now the upcoming Free Trade Area of the Americas. The most important thing about these trade agreements is that they're not about trade. They're about telling governments what they no longer can do to interfere with the free market flow of the transnational corporations. These big companies, whether they're drug companies or oil companies or food companies or, you know, big retailers, do not want to have any government saying you're not welcome here. They don't want them setting conditions under which they can come into their countries. They don't want them saying, for instance, we don't want genetically engineered food. They don't even want them labeling, forcing them to label if their food is genetically engineered. They want to privatize water. There's a huge amount of money to be made to privatizing the world's water. They want open competition in education, health, social services, government services, prisons, and that's the whole new area they're moving into. And it's not about more competition. It's about creating huge monopolies which are allowed to come into your country and basically gobble up your small local industry. So here, for instance, in Hawaii, what we're hearing is about how these institutions, the Asia Development Bank, the World Bank, the WTO, are together forcing indigenous peoples to give up their right to their farming, their fishing, their lands, their traditional ways of knowledge, their culture, and so on, in order to give equal treatment to all. So whether you're a small fisherman or a great big fishing corporation, you're considered equal in the eyes of the IMF. And, you know, and you just go head-to-head and they'll just let whoever's stronger sort it out.
So you don't stand a chance if you're small.
Yeah, free trade protects and promotes big countries, big corporations, big institutions. So what happens is that some countries do well in certain areas, but it's certain sectors of certain countries, all countries, even the United States, and this is really important to know, of course, is that there are losers in all countries. And many, many people in the United States have become equally disenfranchised by this corporate takeover. They might have been American corporations in the beginning, but they've taken over local farming and local communities and local community artisans and so on. So many Americans are feeling the same thing that people around the world are feeling. Well, here in Hawaii, these are Americans, and they're feeling deeply ostracized.
I want to say that we are here in Hawaii having this conversation, and we're both here because the Asian Development Bank is going to be meeting here, and I came to do media, and you came to speak and educate people, Marth Barlow.
Yeah, we have the International Forum on Globalization is putting on a teach-in here, and we're having a big march, and it's quite scary to see the security forces that are being aligned against this very peaceful group of people who want to stand up and say that they're deeply disturbed about the policies of both the World Bank and the Asia Development Bank all through this part of the world, with their huge projects and their, you know, their favoritism for corporations and their imposition on corporate rules on ordinary people's lives. And it's just extraordinary to feel, you know, the tension building up here with the military saying they're going to, you know, have tear gas and rubber bullets. I just came from Quebec City last week, very much involved in the FTAA demonstrations, got tear gas myself quite a few times. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, it's really growing, this use of governments, by governments, of their security forces against their own people in order to protect their corporate security interests. And in Quebec City, they built a great big wall around the site where the leaders were meeting. But corporations were able to buy their way in for a certain amount of money. You got a little access. For $500,000, you got total access to the negotiations, to hang out with the leaders, to have dinner with them. It was just the most blatant thing you ever saw of corporations buying their way in to have access to what were, in essence, very high-level meetings with us, with all the heads of state of all 34 countries of the Americas except Cuba, and the rest of us being pepper-sprayed and tear-gassed and water-cannoned outside this perimeter, from little kids to grandparents to environmentalists to teachers. Everybody else was kept outside the perimeter of that wall. So it's beginning to be a very common kind of thing, and I'm feeling it here as we sit here in this lovely, this beautiful, warm day in Hawaii. You can feel the tension building as well.
Right. I want to put this in a, give it a date. Today is May 5th, 2001, because who knows when people are going to hear this.
Right.
So, yeah, it's really people just, even I was speaking to somebody when I was swimming, actually, in the ocean, and they said, oh, do you think there's really going to be a lot of violence? And because, you know, I was in Seattle, and I said, you know, it's probably 0.00001 of the people who are violent, and who knows, you know, where those people even came from. So it's just all this misinformation and basically rationale for building up all these police.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And the concern, of course, none of us wants violence on any side, and we do not, you know, obviously support people from our side throwing rocks. But I will tell you about Quebec City that, If when it happened, it was a small, tiny small handful. I believe some of them were provocateurs. I mean, there were six people arrested with a big arsenal coming into Quebec City. It turns out, and this was published, I will give the press credit, it was published that it was a police agent provocateur, an older person, who gave these kids this ammunition. A couple of them were ex-soldiers, so they weren't even part of the movement.
And that means that the agent provocateur is a person paid by the government to provoke people and create violence.
Right, but in this case, it was literally somebody who worked for the police department, so there's an investigation taking place, which was really quite terrible. But I have to say that when you saw the volume of weaponry thrown against us, 5,000 canisters of tear gas, something like 1,800 rubber and plastic bullets and water cannons and so on, okay, if some people were provoked, I guess one can understand. I mean, it was just so violent. The violence was so over the top with the Quebec police. Now, I actually don't end up blaming the police. I think that they're doing the job that they're sent by the political masters, if you will, and I think that we have to lay this blame right back. So in a speech that I gave, I said, well, let's talk about vandalism here, because there was vandalism. I said the first vandalism was that wall that they put. I called it that scar of a wall that went through that beautiful city. And I said, let's talk about violence. The real violence is inside these institutions. I mean, by a conservative estimate of Jubilee 2000, the international ecumenical movement, they believe that there are 19,000 children who die every single day as a result of World Bank and IMF policies, where they just come in and, you know, what's good for the corporations and the wealthy of the country is what they do, and they just take people off the land, people starve to death. So, I mean, I can't even begin to contemplate violence like that. And you know, I'm not, we don't indulge and don't believe in, you know, smashing windows and stuff. But I do think one has to compare these kind of violences.
I know that you know a lot about the privatization of water. Let's talk about, just change the subject a little bit here, although, it's, of course, it's all related. It's not really changing the subject. But if you would, Maude Barlow, speak about that. Because, it's kind of obvious. Everybody's got their water bottles. But do talk about it.
Well, we know that the amount of available fresh water is diminishing every single day, and that we are using more of the world's freshwater resources than nature can replenish by a huge amount every single day. We know that it's less than half of 1% of one half of 1% of all the world's total water stock is fresh water. It's a very small and finite amount. We're depleting it, polluting it, and diverting it just at an astonishing rate, so much so that it's now believed that by 2025, two-thirds of the world will be living without water, well, some level of extreme water, extreme or serious water scarcity. I could not over-exaggerate the crisis. And just as we're learning that, instead of governments coming together and saying this is potentially the most pressing issue of our time, next only maybe to climate change, or perhaps they're the same thing, they're turning it over to the two huge transnational water companies who want to privatize the world's water, put it on the open market for sale, and of course it's protected in trade agreements to corporate use. So in NAFTA, they're planning to put it into the FTAA. It's in the WTO because it's a good as considered by the GATT, the General Agreement on Trade and Service and Tariffs. So basically what we have is a situation where if we don't take fast action as peoples of the world in the next few years, we're going to find that we've lost control of our fresh water sources. There's already been situations like Bolivia where the World Bank forced them to privatize water. They brought in Bechtel, the world's biggest engineering company. Bechtel doubled the price of water. There was literally a water war, a water uprising, and Bechtel was forced to leave, but not before there was terrible damage done. Now it's a kind of a nice story at the moment, although we're very worried what's going to happen, but the people of Bolivia are now running their own water system. So it's we're hearing stories about companies coming into countries in Latin America and just buying up huge tracts of land to control the water, the aquifers underneath, or buying river systems, just holding them because I call it blue gold. This will be the most precious commodity of the future. And so we're going to build a movement around water. We call it the Blue Planet Project, and the Council of Canadians is putting on a conference this July in Vancouver on how to preserve the world's water. I call it Water for People and Nature. And it's going to be the first summit on water, civil society summit, that's not UN-sponsored, not sponsored by the World Bank, not sponsored by government, sponsored by our movement. Mm-hmm. And if anybody wants to find out more information on that or to get an analysis in four languages of the FTAA, they can go to our website, which is www.canadians.org. And the FTA paper's in French, English, Spanish, and Portuguese because we really want to get this information, including the water privatization part of it and the water trading part of it, out to our colleagues in Latin America.
Well, that's really important, and so many people don't understand the extent to which these decisions and these institutions, of course, were helped not to understand it. It's not really explained. Don't understand the effect that it has on everybody's lives. Do you want to talk some more, Maude Barlow, about some environmental effects of, or any other kinds of effects of any of the FTAA, NAFTA, GATT, any of these organizations?
Well, maybe to say a word about the effect on women around the world of the new twin threat of services. For a long time, these trade agreements, the GATT, the General Agreement on Trade and Tariffs, just looked at tariffs, which are taxes on imports, to systematically take them away. But then they started talking about what they call non-tariff barriers, which are rules, regulations, policies, standards, health standards, environment, and so on. And then they started talking and saying they want to move into the next area, which is services. So these are public services, social assistance, health care, public education, water, cultural services, all of the areas that we believe governments, or most, or some of us, I certainly believe, governments should be providing as a service because it's a human right and or necessary for the survival of the planet and should not be commodified. Areas that I call the commons, that we've started a number of us calling the commons. And we say, okay, trade certain things and let's set up fair trade rules for those, but you should not be commodifying and trading for profit areas that are needed for social security or the survival of the planet. And that's the incursion now, is the General Agreement on Trade Services, which is the latest trade agreement that the WTO is looking at, the GATS. And it's being very, very heavily negotiated right now in Geneva as we speak. And they're looking at all facets of services. That same agreement has been proposed for the free trade area of the Americas, so that those of us in the Americas are going to have the double threat of the GATS and the FTAA. And basically what this will do is just give the service corporations, the big for-profit hospital corporations or McDonald's high school chains or, you know, the big water privatization companies, the total right to go into any country they want and not only compete with the public sector, but compete and demand equal funding from governments, because one of the key concepts of free trade is called national treatment. You cannot discriminate in favor of your own domestic sector once an area is entered into the trade agreement. So what government's going to be able to afford to pay for a public childcare, you know, center down the street, plus every for-profit childcare center that wants to set up? So this is a women's issue, and I guess what I'm hoping is, and part of the work that I do is trying to get women to start seeing that these trade issues and these international institutions are undoing years and years and years of work that we of our doing of building these infrastructures, of building community, of building the notion that we're a family. Families take care of each other. And in their own way, undoing a lot of the work for women's rights, because you don't have to pass a law against women's rights in this brave new world. All you have to do is make the ones that exist meaningless. And that's what these trade agreements threaten to do, both for human rights, women's rights, the advances we've made on children, the advances we've made on poverty. This all gets wiped out to the bigger imperative of this for-profit system, this market-driven system. The good news is there's a movement building all over the world. It was in Quebec City. It's going to be here in Hawaii. It was, of course, in Seattle. It was on the streets in Washington last year. It's sometimes quiet in a rice field in Indonesia, or a farmer in India who says no to Monsanto. It could be a group of people taking back their river system in Argentina. But all over the world, there is tremendous fight back taking place.
Mm-hmm. Well, as people understand that nothing can interfere with profit, I mean, just the very idea that corporations could say that it is illegal to interfere with profit, it's just, and that's basically the bottom line of what's happening. It's really, and not only is that the case, but they're also using the tax money of people for the governments are going to pay these for this privatization. So it's kind of getting us coming
and going. That's right. The World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, their funding comes from public sources. And so we end up paying for the very policies that end up hurting people and enriching corporations. It's an outrage. And I'd love to know what it would have cost to have those leaders in Quebec City two weeks ago. Now, we know that the fence alone costs something like $50 million. And it costs another $5 million to empty the jail, but that's just the fence and the jail. I mean, what it cost those police officers, the gas canisters, the five-star hotels, they helicoptered in the VIPs from the airport. I mean, it must have cost millions and millions and millions of dollars. And I can tell you, we've had a very steep rise in child poverty in our country since we signed that first free trade agreement. The highest rise in child poverty in the industrialized world, and could we ever use that money for some daycare centers, for some training for some single mothers? It's just an obscenity when I see that money going to places like that. That's maybe the area that gets, that's when you see it really, really closely. It often seems esoteric and far away, but when you see money going into providing the security for them to meet to advance an agenda that's anti-people and anti-environment, and you know that it's costing us taxpayers millions of dollars, it's really enough to make your blood boil.
That's the taxpayers of Canada, for anybody who just tuned in.
But the same thing, when they met in Seattle, it was the taxpayers of the United States who footed that bill. So it's, you know, and it's the taxpayers of the U.S. that foot the biggest bill for the World Bank. So people have a right to know what's happening with their tax dollars and to have a say in how they're spent and to say we want to have values, we want to place values into this system that don't exist now.
So your organization, Maud Barlow, the Council of Canadians, are people really getting very interested and concerned in Canada?
Yes, we are very interested. We work closely with each other. We have coalitions, environmental, church, women's groups, seniors groups, education, so on, environmental, labor. And we work very closely with our colleagues in other countries. We work closely with Public Citizen in the United States and many others, the International Forum on Globalization, many, many environmental groups, Sierra Club, Friends of the Earth, and so on. And we're also extending this work now internationally, and the Internet has made it much easier for us to be able to do this as a as an international movement. So it's very exciting what we're building, and I'm actually very hopeful. We won the fight against this global investment treaty, the Multilateral Agreement on Investment. We shut down the Seattle Ministerial Conference. I know that all they talked about in Quebec City last week was us. So I happen to have a next-door neighbor who was head of operations for the FTAA, and he said, it's all we talked about. We stood and watched you guys down on the streets. We didn't get any business done. So it's a really, we know we're making a difference, and we know we're being heard, and we won't stop until the system starts to open up in a really in an honest way.
Well, that's so important for people to know that it makes a difference to stand up, because people, so many people feel so disempowered and hopeless.
Right. But I tell you, it's getting there. Building a movement is just as important as winning. You know, building and knowing what you're doing and why you're doing it, and knowing that you're doing something for the next generation. I couldn't live with myself otherwise. If I didn't do something with the anger that I feel, I don't know what I would, I don't know how I would deal with the sense of injustice. But I come here and I'm so deeply, deeply moved by the Indigenous peoples that we're hearing today, and they've come from a place just like the First Nations people in my country, where they were taken away from their parents and their mouths were washed out with soap if they used their own language, and they were told to forget their culture and to get into the 20th century and to move it along. And they're recovering their heritage and their ways and their culture, and that's the antidote to economic globalization, is exactly what's happening here, and it's happening all over the world.
And here is in Hawaii, again, people tune in and out of radio. Okay, well, I want to thank you very, very much, Maud Barlow. Maud Barlow is the chairperson of the Council of Canadians, and I hear you're known as like the Ralph Nader of Canada. And if you would give the webpage one last time for people to get in touch.
Okay, I sure would, Sue, and thank you for a great interview. It's www.canadians.org. And we've got tons of stuff on there, water, FTAA, WTO, you name it. We're troublemakers and your friends from Canada.
Okay. Thanks so much, Maud Barlow. My name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.